I'll begin with a confession that'll be familiar to some here. My name is Davidson, and I'm a recovering television addict. That sounds silly, but it's true. When I bought my house 2 years ago, I decided not to have cable connected. And so for the past 2 years, I have not watched any television at home. I don't even have rabbit ears on the set. I made the decision to go cold turkey when I realized that I'd been watching an average of over 4 hours of television a night for several years, and I couldn't remember seeing anything that I needed to know, and very little that I could even remember. Now I read more books. I go out to my shop and turn wooden bowls, and sometimes I even have dinner with friends. Things I didn't have time to do when my television addiction was in full swing. 4 hours a day may sound extreme, but it's not. An online Indian magazine just said that in the 12 months from September 20th of 2004 to September 18th of 2005, just a couple of weeks ago, television had, as they put it, increased its stranglehold on the American culture. They're concerned with our culture. The television set was on in America for an average of 8 hours and 11 minutes a day, the highest figure in the history of television, ever. And that the average American watched 4 hours and 32 minutes of television a day. That's also high. The tube may be our closest friend. I don't think it's a good friend, but it's very close at hand. Children spend more time watching television than they spend in school by over 100 hours a year. They see an average of 30,000 commercials a year. At that rate, by age 65, they'll have seen over 2 million commercials. And in case you didn't know this, the people who write commercials are much better storytellers and much better at appealing to our deep fears and wants and insecurities than public school teachers are. After all, toy manufacturers spend 92% of their whole advertising budget on television ads. They must sell something. Those commercials, you could say, and I don't think it's an exaggeration, those commercials are programming children and adults with powerful image and stories of how we should look, what we should wear, what we should eat and drive, and who we should be. These are religious functions being taken over by the people who write commercials. Think about it. In some important ways, television is the real teacher of our children. It's where they learn the most powerful stories they're going to hear, television and movies. It's where they see the most powerful images they're going to see. And it is where they learn how to look, what to wear, what to eat, and who to be. Still, is this really a religious issue, or is it just the kind of a rant that you'd expect from a recovering addict? It is a rant. I think it's a spiritual issue too, though. And I want to think with you about it in two different ways. One theological and one more down to earth. Most of us grew up in the atmosphere of Western religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. Whether we believed or cared about it or not, it's been in the air. And all three religions make a big deal out of telling the difference between gods and idols, telling the difference between serving something worth serving and serving something not worth serving. Here's an easy lesson in Religion 101 on the difference between gods and idols. We all have gods, whether we call them gods or just call them ideals and central values. And we all make the same deal with them. See if this isn't true for you. Even if you've never put it in these words, see if this isn't the deal you've made with the things you serve in your life. We say, I'll live my life in your terms. I'll make you the center of my life and energies and activities. I'll serve you heart and soul. I'll think, look, and act as you desire. And in return, you must give me a life that was worth living. That's a religious contract. We make it with everything we serve with our lives. And one of the fundamental questions in Western religion is whether what we serve with our lives is serving us. Whether it's a god. Gods, by definition, can give authentic life. That's how they get to be gods. It's part of the deal. Or an idol, which sucks us in to suck life from us, but cannot give life. It's a very important distinction. One person may give their life to working for justice, as they define it. Now, of course, they'll be opposed by their neighbor giving her life to work for justice as she defines it, which is the opposite of the one across the street. Each of them will gladly do this. They'll work rather than take a vacation or read a book about some unrelated topic. And they do it gladly because they believe that there is nothing more worthy of them and their time. They expect when they look back in years to come that they will be able to say, I served the true God. I served this. I made it the center of my life. I made it my God. And it gave me a life I'm proud to have lived. If we can say that, we don't ask for much more. Though we can't always say that. And not everything we chase after can give life. Some things we chase after were never really interested in us at all. We were just kidding ourselves. They just use us for their own ends, and then they lose interest. It's such a shock when it happens. They were so seductive. We were so sure. Chasing after these things or this person or this cause seemed so right. This is what Buddhists or Hindus call the difference between living in illusion or Maya and living in reality. In Western religion, we call it the difference between serving gods and serving idols. Same kind of thing. And chasing after idols, like chasing after mirages or living in illusions, usually ends up draining life from us rather than giving us more into deeper life, because it was never about us. Because idols use their seductive powers to take us in, to use us up, and to throw us out. This word seduction, I think it's just the right word. It's always surprising when people learn that the word seduction comes from the same root as the word education. The D-U-C is the root of the word, and it means to lead. We have a lot of words like that. We have conduction. So a conductor leads the musicians through the music. Or a bus or train conductor leads the bus or train through the countryside. Or an electrical conductor leads electricity through a copper circuit. Induction leads you into something, the army or the hall of fame. Education, we don't use eduction now. Education means to lead you outward, out from your small self into a larger self. That's what education's about. It's why we go to school. To learn to become bigger, deeper, more aware, more nuanced, more human, more humane. We want to be led into a bigger sense of identity and a bigger life. We want to be educated. This is a profoundly religious function, if it's done well. And seduction, it means to lead astray. It means to lead off the path. It means to lead somewhere that doesn't make you bigger, deeper, or better. It means to lead you in ways that serve not you, God knows, but your seducer. Your seducer takes you in. You follow gladly, willingly, because you've been seduced, but you think you're going to be educated. Then you're used to fill the seducer's needs, used up and tossed aside. A seducer is an idol, a powerful but illusory presence that you want to follow but shouldn't follow because they'll lead you astray to serve themselves at your expense. The oldest and most vivid story of seduction, one of my favorite stories in history, comes from almost 3,000 years ago, from the Odyssey of ancient Greece. If you know the story, you may remember the scene where Odysseus had to sail his ship past the island where the sirens lived. Those supernatural but deadly women who would seduce him and his crew with their siren song. No one could resist that song, he was told. No one, not even him. But he was curious. He was also, luckily, smart. So he had his men tie him to the mast so he couldn't get loose, and then he had them put beeswax in all of their own ears so they couldn't hear this. And they sailed past the sirens, and the siren songs came out, and Odysseus heard them, and he screamed and yelled and pleaded and demanded that his men untie him and sail for the shore. He couldn't resist it any more than anyone else, but they couldn't hear him. And so they sailed on. If you looked closely at that shore as you sailed by, you noticed the piles of white bones bleached by the sun and the surf. That's all that was left of those who had been seduced by the siren songs and used up and cast aside. That's seduction. The seducers, like the sirens, are only doing what comes naturally to them. They're just a lot better at it than you are. So they take you in. It's so easy for them to take you in and then to use you as they will. But anybody who's that easy to take in, think about this, is very hard to care much about. If someone is so easy to take in, it's pretty hard to care what happens. Something in you wants to say, well, they deserve what they got. That's a dark side of seduction. So you can see why so many people want to say that whatever else you might be able to say about God, above all, God is love. Because love wouldn't do that to you. Seduction would, but not God, not education. Not anything that cared about you. Now, what does this have to do with television? I don't mean to be redundant. Seduction means leading astray, leading away from wholeness, truth, and health into a direction that serves the seducer at the expense of the seduced in any field. Television distracts us from life in order to draw us into crowds to hawk their wares to. You might ask, what about news? Don't we need news? I would ask you to think about how much news we get, how complete it is, how reliable it is, and whether news programs, just like other entertainment programs, aren't really trying to draw a crowd for their sponsors, rather than educate them. If news is the information that keeps people free, I don't think there's been much news on television in decades. And then look at how the time is actually spent on news programs. I've done a small bit of research on this. About 30% of the total time on a news program is spent in commercials. Nearly 54% of the time is spent on stories dealing with war, crime, and terror. And one of the slogans of nearly all news programs that you've all heard is, "If it bleeds, it leads." Now, is this education or is this seduction? Do they want to serve you or use you? Well, you might think, if the world is really full of war and all that bad stuff, then we need to know about it. So it's education. Well, we need to know some things. We need to know why there is a war. We need to know who's making money from it. We need to know exactly why we got into it. We need to know what deceptions were used to trick others into losing their lives there or supporting it. That's news. It would help to know the economic background of most of our crime, why people feel driven to crime in order to get by, and how the crime at the low levels mirrors the kind of crime at the upper levels of society. How the wilding of a gang of youth in Central Park can look so much like the wilding of CEOs simply gutting the pension fund and the profit bins of corporations representing the savings of thousands of people. We need to know these things. These are useful patterns. That's news. We don't get those things. And the focus on crime and terror, I think, aren't to educate us. They're the evening news version of "If it bleeds, it leads." It's car crash journalism, meant to draw a crowd of passing sailors to its shores, like the sirens, for example. During 1 5-year period, television coverage of homicides went up by 336%, nearly 3.5 times. Yet during that same period, the actual homicides in the real world went down by 13%. That's not news. That's not education. That's not serving viewers. That's a siren song. It's car crash journalism. The effects of using violence to draw crowds. Now, this isn't a secret, not even in the industry. 4 out of 5 Hollywood executives believe that there is a link between TV violence and real-life violence. I can't imagine what the other 20% think is going on. Over 9 out of 10 children interviewed say they feel upset or scared by violence on television. The longest we go on television without a commercial break now is 8 minutes. Violence, terror, murder, sex, and brutality are featured on the news for the same reason they are featured on so many regular television shows, because they draw a crowd that the sponsor can reach. Is this education or seduction? Is it serving us or is it using us? Spending an average of 4.5 hours a day watching television means we're spending 1/4 of our waking time and nearly all of our leisure time sitting in front of a tube. When I was watching an average of 4 hours of TV a night, I watched mostly the Law and Order type shows, or CSI, or Monday Night Football. I found that I was more paranoid, more aware of danger, less aware of and less trusting in grace or kindness. I was more suspicious of others, and when I dreamed, the dreams often had violent themes. Since I stopped watching TV 2 years ago, I seldom dream. and almost never have violent themes in my dreams or in my waking imagination. It's somehow much easier now to see and believe in the loving and kind parts of people, and to see violence and deceit as sins against humanity, rather than the way things work in a dog-eat-dog world. Even when I watched good dramas, and I thought a lot of the Law and Order shows were good dramas and well acted, the aftertaste was violent. I never felt better after watching them, never. I never felt uplifted. I never had my faith in myself or in humanity strengthened, only weakened. And so, like many addicts, I don't have much good to say for the drug that has seduced me and can seduce me so easily. But I don't hate television because of car crash journalism that draws crowds to sell them things rather than to educate or enlarge them. Or because it seduces Americans into living vicariously within the stories it spins to attract them, while its commercials help them run up credit card debts to an average of more than $10,000 at an annual rate of 22% interest or more. I don't hate television because it tries to seduce us into wanting material wealth when what we need is personal and spiritual wealth. Or the reality TV that both reflects and programs the selfish and the deceptive behavior used to get ahead in a dog-eat-dog world, while downplaying or ignoring our humanity, our decency, and our compassion. And for the record, I don't think I've ever seen a dog eat a dog. And I don't hate news shows that titillate rather than educate, and that turn serious debates into the shallow, sensationalist jousts of the day. Or the fact that after a few years of watching 4 hours of TV a day, I still can't remember anything I learned that I needed to know. And I don't hate television because I resent the fact that commercials work and I, like millions of others, keep buying things I don't need. Well, yes, I do. Yes, I do hate television for this. But I hate it the way an alcoholic hates alcohol, because I'm addicted to it. When it's on, I watch it like an idiot. I will sit in bars. I sat in a bar last night reading over the sermon. The television was on. The sound was off. And I sat there watching two football teams play that I didn't know and could not have cared less who won. And I can't tell you who won. When I'm on the road, I sit in front of the TV in my motel room for 4 hours every night. The next morning, I can't remember what I watched or why, and I'm glad to return home to a TV set that can only play movies or videos on how to turn bowls. Now, maybe you're not addicted. Your self-control may be much better than mine. Unless you're watching 4.5 hours of TV a day, that is. But television is not an innocent presence in our homes. I think it's a dangerous one. Because we're shaped by the most powerful stories we learn. We're molded by the ideals and the values that we absorb. All of education and all of religion count on this, and so do advertisers. Education at its best is about leading us out of ourselves into a bigger identity and a bigger world. Religion at its best is about inducting us into a kind of sangha, a beloved community that holds these high values to be sacred. And the media, I think, neither educate nor induct, but seduce. They lead astray. They're the siren songs of today, and like mighty Odysseus, few of us are very good at resisting them. Think about it this way. Would you invite a costumed storyteller into your home every night to tell you stories of blood, greed, hate, murder, and violence, leaving you more fearful and paranoid, robbing you of the time you might have spent doing things together, and then, the next day, would you rush out to buy things you don't need so that the sponsors will send this same clown back the next night? You think that's nuts. Nobody would do that. Or do you? A few years ago, the Surgeon General of the United States sponsored Turn Off the TV Week. When the Surgeon General sponsored the Turn Off the TV Week, he said, "We are raising the most overweight generation of youngsters in American history. This week is about saving lives." The Surgeon General says television is bad for physical health. But most of it is just as bad for emotional, intellectual, psychological, and spiritual health. After the week was over, a second grader named Drew Henderson from Donora, Pennsylvania, said this. He said, "I really didn't like TV turn-off week, except that I did notice that my grades went up and I was in a good mood all week." If you have a habit that disconnects you from life and puts you in a bad mood all the time, and if getting away from the lure of those siren songs could help your grades go up, your involvement with real life and real people go up, and put you in a much better mood, I wonder, isn't it time to think about kicking the habit?